We love to explain quantum physics and the mysteries of the universe, but the mysteries of finance, not so much. Intuit helps you demystify your finances through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Understanding standard deductions or interest rates can be very complicated and tricky, with big potential consequences. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Hey, Jorge, do you think that our podcast exists out there in the multiverse?
Like, if I think there are other versions of us doing this podcast?
Yeah, you know, do you think in other universes there are people puzzling over how the universe works and podcasts trying to explain it to them?
I guess if they live in a universe, then there are probably people wondering about the universe, and there might be a cartoonist and a physicist also wondering about the universe, and they might have also met and started a podcast. That's technically possible.
I wonder if they also make the same chocolate and banana jokes.
Maybe they make chocolate-covered banana jokes?
Ooh, I think we're in danger of crossing over into the multiverse.
What if they're making white chocolate and strawberry jokes, which no. I'm allergic to? That'd be like the anti-version of this podcast.
Then we would annihilate if we ever met.
Whoa, it's like the anti-Daniel and Jorge explains universe. But would they still explain the universe if it's an anti-podcast?
Maybe they'd be explaining the anti-universe.
They'd be not explaining the universe. Sort of like how we do here most weeks.
I just want to taste their exotic chocolate.
What if we're the anti-version of their podcast?
It's all relative, man.
Does that mean our listeners are anti-listeners?
As long as they're not anti-listening.
Jorge, I'm a cartoonist and author of Oliver's Great Big Universe.
Hi, I'm Daniel. I'm a particle physicist and a professor at UC Irvine, and I definitely listen rather than anti-listen to all the questions from our listeners.
But do you anti-answer them, or do you actually answer them?
I think of my answers are sort of like anti-questions, because they annihilate the question when they receive them.
Wait, what? Oh, I see. Yeah. And then they become pure energy and they disappear into the air. So really, there's no substance or matter to them. Is that what you're saying? The whole interaction just goes up in a flash of light.
I'm hoping that my answer turns their question into pure mental energy, illuminating the inside of their mind.
Whoa, it sounds a little dangerous and hippy-dippy.
A little bit crunchy, yeah.
But anyways, welcome to our podcast, Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe, a production of iHeartRadio.
Where we try to light up the inside of your mind with our understanding of the universe. We tackle the biggest questions out there, from the smallest particles to the most vast astrophysical objects that humanity has ever observed. We don't stop at the deep questions. We go for the deepest questions. We don't stop at the big questions. We try to answer the biggest questions because we think all of those questions deserve our best answers.
That's right. This is the podcast where we're anti-ignorance and pro asking questions about the universe and learning how everything works and why we are here. Specifically in this part of the universe.
That's right. And we are pros some kinds of chocolate and some kinds of bananas at certain times of the day.
Actually, you can't be pro against other kinds of bananas because most of the bananas out there are the same kind. Did you know that?
That's true. Isn't it like a monoculture?
Yeah. Like they found one banana that tasted really good and then they're like, everybody make the same banana. So they've just been cloning the same banana for all over the world, basically.
But I've had like little red bananas sometimes in Mexico. Aren't those different?
Yeah. There are other kinds of bananas, but most of the ones that you see, like the yellow ones that you see in most supermarkets everywhere, pretty much around the world, they're the same bananas.
And welcome to our podcast, The Science of Bananas.
Ooh, hey, we did a podcast about chocolate.
That's true.
I challenged you, Daniel, to do a podcast about the physics of bananas.
All right, we're doing
it. Now, I know it's a slippery subject.
I think it's quite appealing, actually.
Yeah, it'll put a big yellow smile on your face.
All right, if you are a professor of banana physics, please write to me. I want to talk to you about the physics of bananas. If you are the chief banana officer of Chiquita, also please reach out to me.
Aren't all physicists technically banana physicists?
We're all a little bit bananas, that's true, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're discovering banana facts about the universe.
The universe is bananas, that's for sure.
But anyways, we do like to try to answer questions here on the podcast because everybody has questions.
That's right. And we think that everybody's questions deserve answers. Not just professional physicists who've been spending their whole lives working their ways to the forefront of human knowledge. It turns out everybody has questions that are tricky to answer, that bring us right into the abyss of human ignorance.
Yeah, because as much as we've learned about the universe and discovered its laws and how it all works, there are still a whole lot that we don't know about how it's all put together. And there are still lots of mysteries out there.
And one of our goals on this podcast is to teach you to think about the universe like a physicist, to try to make in your mind a mental model for how it all works, and then look for inconsistencies. Try to figure out if you really understand how it works. Does that mental model work in this scenario or that scenario? How does it explain this thing or that thing? Or do you have a new idea for how we can understand something? We want you to flex your brain in that direction. And when it doesn't quite work, reach out to us and ask us about it. You might be surprised that lots of other people out there have the same questions you do.
Daniel, does that mean you're trying to convert people to dark chocolate? This is starting to feel like a little cult here, like a physics cult.
I think if becoming educated and thinking clearly about the universe leads people to eating dark chocolate, that tells you something about chocolate, yeah.
You're saying that's like a win-win.
I think the universe has a dark chocolate bias, yes.
Well, we do like to answer questions. And so today on the podcast, we'll be tackling... listener questions, number 50. Well, should this be kind of a celebration? The 50th listener question episode.
Yeah, congratulations us and congratulations our listeners for asking so many awesome questions.
Now, did you have a rule that only people over 50 can ask questions in this episode?
Oh, definitely not. I think one of our listeners is quite young, but I try not to ask them because some people are sensitive.
But yeah, 50 is kind of a big number. Are we supposed to have a midlife crisis here at some point?
No, a midlife celebration. I'm turning 50 in a couple of years and I'm looking forward to it. I'm embracing it.
Nice. Do you have any big plans? Sit in the couch and eat dark chocolate is the big 5-0 party for you.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but that sounds like every day around here. So I'm not sure how I'm going to distinguish that one day from the other days.
Oh, well, you have to spin it the right way. It means you celebrate life every day, Daniel.
There you go.
Sitting in your couch and eating dark chocolate.
Embrace it. And if you celebrate life and celebrate understanding the universe and you have questions about how it all works, you could have your question answered here on the podcast. Just write to us. questions@danielandjorge.com. You will definitely get an answer to your question, and you might even have it played on the podcast.
Yeah, so we like to answer listener questions here on the podcast. And so today we have three great questions from people all over the world, and they are about dark matter, about rainbows, and the wavelength of light. Daniel, is there a theme to these questions?
These are all questions that arrived on the same day.
Are they like in the top 50 questions we've ever gotten?
They're in the top 150 questions, yes, because we answer three per episode.
I see. There's a special selection process here. It goes straight from the inbox into the microphone.
That's right. That's the pipeline right now.
Well, we do have some pretty cool questions here today. And so we'll start with this one from Johnny from Sweden.
Hi, Daniel and Jorge. This is Johnny from Sweden. I have a question about dark matter that I have thought about for a long time and haven't found an answer to. If you can shed some light on this question, I would be very grateful. Could dark matter actually be the gravity from matter that exists in a higher dimension? Thank you for the best podcast in the whole universe.
All right, great question from Johnny here. Kind of a trippy question. There's a lot going on here. Higher dimensions, dark matter, gravity.
I think Johnny is trying to find an out-of-the-box solution to the question of dark matter.
It's a heavy question.
It is a heavy question, one that physicists have been struggling with. I know that there's a lot of dissatisfaction out there with the concept of dark matter being this weird, invisible matter that nobody ever noticed before, but actually dominates the universe. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, but we think it's real. Of course, we're open to other ideas and other theories and other explanations, because in the history of physics, sometimes the craziest ideas turn out to be true.
Yeah, even the banana ones, right?
Dark matter could just be bananas.
Yeah. Okay, so the question here is kind of interesting. So dark matter is this thing out there in the universe that we don't know much about, but we feel its presence, but we can't see it. And it's pretty big. It's like a quarter of the mass and energy of the universe, right?
That's right. It's like 80% of the stuff in the universe, and like a quarter of all the energy in the universe is this invisible source of gravity.
And it's super mysterious because we know it's there from its gravity. Like, we can feel its pull, or at least we can see the effects of its gravitational pull, but we've never actually seen it or have any idea what it could be. Like, it's super weird, right? Like, it's there, but we can't see it or touch it.
Yeah, that's right. What we actually know, what we really observe, is gravity. So in the most pure sense, the mystery is, what's the source of this unexplained gravity? There's no matter out there in the universe we could see that explains all the gravity that we measure, that's holding the universe together, that's keeping galaxies from spinning apart, that shaped the structure of the whole universe. So there's unexplained gravity out there, and dark matter is our best explanation for it, to say there must be some new kind of matter that's invisible and probably intangible, and that's creating all of this gravity.
Which seems kind of bonkers if you really think about it, because most of the matter that we know about, that we've known for hundreds or thousands of years, you can see it and touch it. But this kind of matter, it's like you're almost inventing a new kind of matter to explain this gravitational phenomenon. But we don't really know if that's true or not, right?
It's true that it's kind of bonkers, but maybe it's less bonkers than extrapolating from our kind of matter to the whole universe. It's true that everything we've ever experienced is made of atoms, but that doesn't mean that everything has to be made out of atoms. The history of physics tells us we should be really careful about extrapolating from our little corner of the universe and our kind of experience to the whole universe. The revolutions of quantum mechanics and of relativity were moments when we realized we've been looking too narrowly at only our own experience. So to say that the rest of the universe should also be made out of atoms because we are and the Earth is, seems like a pretty big leap. What we're doing here is saying, well, maybe there are other kinds of matter out there, ones that are not made out of atoms, and so don't interact in the same way that atoms do.
Well, that's one possible explanation, and that seems to be where most of physics is leaning, but Johnny here has an alternate theory for what causes dark matter.
Exactly. He's asking if this gravity could instead be coming from matter that exists in a higher dimension, rather than like a new invisible kind of matter in our 3D space.
Yeah, fascinating idea. If he's right, he would get like all the Nobel Prizes, right?
If he's right and we can test it and prove it, then yeah, Johnny has changed the world and history.
All right, well, let's dig into his idea. He's saying that maybe a dark matter, what we experience or feel as dark matter, is maybe actually matter that is not in the dimensions we're in, but they're in other dimensions.
Yeah, I wasn't exactly sure what he meant by matter that exists in a higher dimension, because the word dimension is a little bit fuzzy. Like, in physics, there's a crisp definition of it. But in popular science and in science fiction and in normal everyday conversation, I think dimension means something else. Like, often I think people say dimension when they mean like a parallel universe. You know, like people talk about interdimensional aliens visiting the Earth, right? I think what they mean there are aliens from like a parallel universe, from like another copy of the universe, like a different set of space.
Right. And we've talked about this in our books and in previous episodes. And I know that you're sort of against this sci-fi idea of the dimension as being like in a separate universe that you go into. But it sort of kind of is, right? It is sort of the idea of a separate part of space than the one we're sitting on.
Mm-hmm. I'm not against it. I mean, the idea of a parallel universe is certainly possible. This concept of the multiverse, that we could have multiple universes, maybe with different starting conditions or different even laws of physics, who knows, right? I think that's totally plausible scientifically. I'm just pointing out that that's not what we mean by dimension when we talk about it mathematically or physically, but you know, that's just semantics. So let's assume first that this is what he means by dimension. Like, is dark matter actually gravity from a parallel universe? Like maybe in another universe, there's a huge blob of normal matter and we're feeling its gravity somehow leak out into our universe. And that's what we're calling dark matter.
That's how you're interpreting his question, his scenario.
Yeah, that's one possibility. We can also talk about the other definition.
Well, let's do it one at a time.
So in this scenario where a dimension means a parallel universe and you're wondering if dark matter is actually like some blob of stuff in another universe that's creating gravity in our universe, I don't think that can work because, you know, gravity is the bending of space and time. And so if matter is bending our space and time, then it's in our space-time. Like that's sort of what it means to be in our space-time. If we have a shared space-time, like that matter can bend our space-time, then it's part of our universe. So you can't both be in another universe and affect things in this universe.
Well, I think you're sort of arguing semantics now. It's like you're saying like if there is sort of this whole part of this whole universe basically that you can exist in, mm-hmm. but that we don't have a lot of access to, but if it's somehow connected to our universe, you're saying that means both universes are really just one universe.
Exactly. I'm saying it's one universe. And then it's really the same idea, right? Then it's just some kind of matter that we can't interact with for some reason, but is able to bend our space-time, therefore cause gravity. That's just the same idea as dark matter.
Well, you sort of sound like my daughter, because she's always saying, like, if the multiverse exists, wouldn't it all just be the universe? So, I mean, like physicists do have a name for like a universe mm-hmm. and something mm-hmm. bigger than a universe, which is a multiverse.
Yeah, I think this is a tiny bit different from your daughter's point, though she has a good one. You know, the idea of a multiverse is that these universes don't interact. They really are separate universes. But if they do interact, why would you call them separate universes? How are these higher dimensions if we're able to interact with this kind of matter? And if we can interact with it, why can't we see it? Well, the answer has to be with some other new kind of matter, which basically, we're back at dark matter.
Right, right. Well, I feel like it's kind of like, you know, if I dig a tunnel from my house to your house, I mean, it'd be a pretty long tunnel, but if we do uh-huh. that, would that mean that we all live in one house? Or could you still say that we live in separate houses, which is the tunnel connecting them?
You know, I think if I can go from my house to your house without going outside, then yeah, it's probably just one house.
What if I put a big door in the tunnel and I lock it?
Interesting. I'm sure there's some California legal statute that defines what is a residence and what is not, and I'm not qualified to opine on that question.
All right. So you're shooting down this idea that his question actually means that dark matter is matter in a separate mm-hmm. universe, because then it would just be the same universe.
Yeah, exactly. Then it would just be dark matter.
I think maybe John is trying to get at the idea that we can sort of feel it, but sort of not mm-hmm. feel dark matter. Mm-hmm. So like maybe this is matter that exists in another universe, or another huge chunk of the universe, but that is not fully connected to our universe. Like it, maybe it's only connected to a tunnel, which in this case would be gravity.
Yeah, potentially. But then you have to ask like why we can't interact with that other kind of matter. And then you have to make it another kind of matter. If it's sharing our space, bending our space-time, it doesn't interact with us, then you have to ask, you know, why not? What makes our matter and that matter. And so you have to make it another kind of matter and then it becomes dark matter all over again.
All right, so now say that quickly 7 times in a row.
But there is another way to interpret his question, which I think is much more interesting, which is the physics definition of dimension. Because he doesn't say another dimension, he says a higher dimension, which I think might be a useful clue. Because in physics, we think of dimensions not as, you know, it came from another dimension, but as directions of motion. Like we describe our space as three-dimensional space or four-dimensional space-time, because we say there are three directions of motion. Like if you draw axes out in space, you get X, Y, and Z. There's three directions you can move. You don't need four directions to describe our space. And so I think he's asking, like, what if our space actually is higher dimensional? What if there are 4, 5, 6, 10 dimensions of space and we're only seeing a slice of it, and dark matter somehow exists in those higher dimensions and is influencing us?
Interesting. Okay, so, and I think maybe this is what he means, because he uses the word higher dimension,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, if he meant like an alternate dimension, he wouldn't say the word higher.
Yeah, I think so. Although maybe he's smoking something and he's higher. You never know.
Yeah. Or maybe he's more, elevated or enlightened.
Exactly. And this can be hard to visualize. What is higher dimensional space? Because 3D space sort of fills up your mind, because we're so used to thinking in 3D space because we live in 3D space. So it's easier to take a step from 2D space to 3D space, to like take a step back and imagine, what if our universe was 2D? What would it be like to have a three-dimensional universe, rather than trying to go from 3 to 4? So imagine, for example, we're living on the surface of the ocean. You know, our universe is just the 2D surface of the ocean. But what if the universe actually has another dimension that can influence us, like the depth of the ocean?
And so then Johnny's idea is that maybe there's matter in our universe, mm-hmm. that maybe only exists in these other dimensions that are not our regular 3D dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that possible? Like, can matter exist in some dimensions and not others? If there is maybe a 4th or 5th dimension to our universe, am I moving around in it? Or do I have to be moving around in it? Or do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And I think there's an important but maybe subtle distinction here. Matter has to exist in all of the dimensions of space-time. You have to have a location in all of those directions. But it could be that there's matter that has a different location in this new dimension. Like, say, for example, our universe is the 2D surface of the ocean. So we have a location in the depth dimension, but you could imagine having matter that exists deeper in the ocean. So it doesn't intersect our 2D surface at all. It's in the universe. It exists in all three dimensions of that 3D universe, but no part of it overlaps in our 2D slice of the universe. But it could still influence us.
It could still influence us because it's connected to us through a dimension.
Exactly. It's part of our space-time, right? And so then Johnny's question is like, well, what if there's matter that's part of a four-dimensional space, but its location in that 4D space means we can't see it? It's like in a different location along that new 4th dimension than we are. Like, we're on the 3D surface of that 4D ocean, and it's like deeper down along that 4th dimension. If gravity is the curvature of space-time and there's matter in that part of the universe, the deeper ocean of the universe, wouldn't it also affect our space-time and therefore look like dark matter?
Right. It might affect us gravitationally, because let's say like we're on the surface of the ocean, as you're saying, and this other matter is right below us. We might feel its gravity might pull us in a certain direction, but when we try to look around and feel for it and touch it and see it, we can't, because it's actually underneath us.
Exactly. And this is a really compelling idea. There's sort of two problems with it. One is you need an explanation for why we can't touch it. Like, why are we restricted to the surface of this four-dimensional ocean? Why can this kind of matter exist and move in 4 dimensions, and we're stuck at this one location in that 4th dimension? Like, why are we on the surface of this ocean and this other matter can like sink or swim or whatever?
You mean like, why are we stuck in 2 dimensions? Why can't we go down into the ocean?
Exactly. Yeah. And why does that matter never surface, right? How can we never see it? But the real problem is mathematical, which is that we know how many dimensions there are to space-time. We can measure how many dimensions there are to space-time, because the dimensionality of space-time, like how many ways you can move, changes how gravity works.
But isn't higher dimensions or other dimensions part of things like string theory? Like, isn't this an active possibility that physicists are considering?
Yeah, you're exactly right. People do look for extra dimensions. But one of the big challenges to those ideas, like string theory that requires the universe has 10 or 26 dimensions, or other crazy theories that look for additional dimensions of space-time, is that we're not seeing them. We can go out in the universe and we can pretty easily look for extra dimensions, and we don't see them. You know, for example, the number of dimensions of space-time changes how gravity varies with distance. We know in the Newtonian description that gravity gets weaker as you get further away, but it doesn't just fall off linearly. It's not like twice as far away, gravity is twice as weak. Twice as far away, gravity is 4 times as weak. It goes like 1/(1/2). And that number, the square, tells you the dimensionality of space-time. If we lived in four-dimensional universe, that would be 1 over the distance cubed. If we lived in a 19-dimensional universe, it would be 1 over the distance to the 18th power.
But isn't that only if you assume that gravity works a certain way? Like, what if the gravity doesn't work the way you think it does?
Yeah, if you want to also overthrow general relativity, then you got a lot more work ahead of you.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of work. I got all day here.
You and Johnny should get to that higher dimension and get to work on it. But, you know, if we're not changing gravity, if we're not changing how gravity works, we're just asking, does the universe have additional dimensions? And could there be matter hiding those dimensions that creates gravity that we see that could be explaining what we're seeing instead of dark matter? Then if we're sticking with our theory of gravity, that's pretty hard to make it happen.
Isn't your assumption here that this theory of gravity that you're saying that you're sticking by, isn't that a theory of gravity that we've gotten by doing experiments in the dimensions that we have access to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Could maybe gravity be actually more powerful than you think? And so therefore, when you try to measure it, there are other dimensions, but it drops off as 1 over r squared, as you're saying?
There are some really cool theories that there are these other dimensions, but those dimensions are not like our dimensions. They don't go out to negative and positive infinity like ours, but they're like curled up little rings so that you can only have like 2 centimeters or 1 centimeter. And that would solve this problem with gravity getting stronger or weaker. It actually would solve the problem in a really fascinating way, because if you get really close to something, then gravity would get very, very powerful. And that would actually help us understand why gravity is so weirdly weak. But go check out our podcast on extra dimensions. But you got to assume something, right? And so if you're assuming our theory of gravity, then I don't think this quite works, because if those extra dimensions exist, they would have to be super duper tiny and there wouldn't be mass in them. But if we're also getting rid of our theory of gravity, then yeah, anything's possible.
Well, it sounds like you kind of have to have that open mind, right? When you explore physics.
Yeah, absolutely you do. And we do think that there are problems with our theory of gravity. We think that general relativity is probably not the final answer to how space-time works, because it ignores the quantum nature of it. So we're definitely open to modification of those ideas, yeah.
All right, well then, what's the final answer for Johnny here?
I would say that it's possible that there are additional dimensions with matter in them that doesn't appear in our 3D slice of space, but it'd be pretty hard to explain all of the dark matter using that, because those dimensions would be tiny and would be curled up. I think it's much more likely that dark matter really is a new kind of matter that exists in our universe.
Unless, of course, our whole theory of gravity is wrong, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, great question, Johnny. Thanks for sending that in. Now let's get to our other questions. We have a question here about rainbows and one about the wavelength of light. So let's dig into those. But first, let's take a quick break.
The financial universe out there can seem like a vast place full of scary mysteries and exciting possibilities, but it can also be overwhelming to navigate, especially when you're first starting out in life. It feels sometimes like just one wrong turn could send you hurtling endlessly towards a financial black hole. But don't worry, you don't have to navigate the financial universe on your own. With the right tools, you can master the financial universe and chart your course with confidence. Intuit helps you navigate the financial universe through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it. Physicists are famously sticklers for detail. And when it comes to the fine print contracts and hidden fees from wireless providers, I've learned that there's always a catch somewhere. So when I heard that the Mint Mobile wireless plans are just $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, I thought, where's the catch? But now I'm convinced there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online, so they cut out the cost of retail stores and they pass all those savings directly to you. Personally, I love using Mint Mobile. The calls are always crystal clear. So you can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/universe. That's mintmobile.com/universe. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/universe. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love. and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
All right, we're answering listener questions here today. And our next question comes from Sonia.
Hi, Daniel and Jorge. My name is Sonia, and I was wondering if there was a minimum and or maximum wavelength for light. Thank you.
All right, great question, Sonia. I wonder what made her think about the nature of light.
I get this question all the time, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to answer it on the podcast. It's something that a lot of people seem to wonder about, because you learn that light is described by this wavelength, and the wavelength is connected to the color. And then I think it just makes people wonder about the extremes. Like, we talk about the extreme nature of the universe all the time. What is the beginning? What is the end? What is the biggest? What is the smallest? People's curiosity make them want to push to the extreme edges of knowledge.
All right, well, her question is whether light has a minimum or maximum wavelength. So, Daniel, how do you describe what the wavelength of light is?
So we understand light to be electromagnetic oscillations. That just means waves in electrical and magnetic fields. Like, electrical fields are things we're very familiar with. You have charged particles, they make electric fields. Magnetic fields are something we're familiar with. You have magnets, moving electric charges can make magnetic fields. And so light is this particular configuration of electromagnetic fields, where the electric field creates a magnetic field, which creates an electric field, sloshes back and forth. But it's fundamentally a wave. It's a wave in these fields that fill space. And those waves are described, like all waves, by a wavelength, which is like how long it takes in distance as the light travels before it repeats the same configuration. So the electric field is going up and down, the magnetic field is going up and down. How far does the light travel before the electric field is back into its original configuration? That's the wavelength of the light.
Sort of like a wave in the ocean, right?
Yeah, exactly. Something to understand about these waves is people see visualizations of light traveling, and they see it as like a sinusoidal wave moving through space. And they get the impression that the light is like wiggling sideways, that it has like a width to it. But light moves along a line. And what's changing is the magnitude of the electric and magnetic field, which are like little arrows that are pegged to that line. Sometimes those arrows are drawn like with their base pointing in some direction and their tip away from the line. That's just telling you the magnitude of the electric field. The electric field doesn't like reach out sideways. It's a vector field, and so it can point in different directions.
Okay, so it's an oscillation of these fields, and so things can have a wavelength, which, as far as we know, can vary, right? Like, that's how we get different colors when we look at things.
Exactly. Light comes in all kinds of different wavelengths, and different wavelengths are interpreted by our eye as different colors. So there's a very narrow set of those wavelengths that we can actually see. We call that the visible spectrum. It goes, you know, from the reddest colors we can see up to the most violet colors we can see. But light extends its spectrum well above that and well below that. The ultraviolet, the infrared, X-rays, gamma rays, radio waves, all these are just light with different wavelengths.
Yeah, I think that's basically Sonia's question, is like, light can go up in frequency from what we can see, and it can go down in frequency. And their question is, how far can that go?
Yeah, exactly. And there's a few different concepts there. Right now, we're just talking about wavelength, right? Long wavelengths are like radio waves, short wavelengths are like ultraviolet, gamma rays. You can also talk about frequency. Frequency is the inverse of wavelength because light always has the same velocity. So short wavelengths means high frequency. Radio waves that have long wavelengths have very low frequency. It's all the same thing. You can just express it in different ways. But the frequency is useful because it's connected to the energy. Like the energy of light is connected to its frequency. Higher frequency light, ultraviolet, X-rays, have more energy than lower frequency light, like radio waves.
But it's all the same thing, right? Like for light, it's all tied to the speed of light. And so you can also say that the energy of a light wave is tied to its wavelength as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It has an inverse relationship to its wavelength and it's linearly proportional to its frequency.
Right, so it's the same thing. So you can also say that the energy of something is tied to its wavelength. The higher the wavelength, the lower the energy of light?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay, so her question is, how far up and down the frequency spectrum or the wavelength spectrum can you go with light?
Yeah, and so in theory, there's no limit. Like as you say, it's just controlled by the energy. Is there any limit to how much energy a photon can have? Is there any minimum to how much energy a photon can have? The only limit there is zero. Theoretically, it can't have zero energy, but it could have any tiny amount of energy, any number you want, 0.00000, 100 zeros, and then a one, joules or whatever. You could have a photon with that energy.
Could you though? Are you sure about that? Like what if the electromagnetic fields are quantized?
So if we're still just talking theoretically, then electromagnetic fields are quantized, but they're quantized in number of photons, not in energy of those photons. And so if we're just talking about like photons out in free space, they're not confined or anything, then they can have any wavelength and therefore any energy. This is just in theory. There are some maybe practical limits to like how long a wavelength a photon might have or how short a wavelength a photon might have. But according to like theoretical quantum field theory of electromagnetism, there are no limits there except for zero. You can't have a photon with zero energy.
According to the theory, right?
Yeah, according to the theory.
Is it possible that maybe it'll turn out later that these magnetic fields are quantized or have a minimum wavelength to them?
Yeah, it's possible. Like we might extend our theory to understand the universe differently. For example, this theory assumes that space is continuous, that it's smooth, that there's no shortest possible distance in space, and therefore no minimum wavelength. That you can keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller distances, and those things are meaningful. But that might be wrong. It might be that space is not smooth and continuous, but it's pixelated, that there's a minimum meaningful distance to space, in which case there would be a minimal possible wavelength to light.
Interesting. Or at least a meaningful minimum wavelength, right? Like maybe you could still have minimum wavelengths, smaller wavelengths, but you just wouldn't be able to see them? Or are you saying they might not exist at all?
In this scenario, they wouldn't exist at all because remember that light is an oscillation of the electromagnetic field, which is part of space. And so if you have like a fundamental unit of space, like a space pixel, then you can't have anything vary inside that pixel. The electromagnetic field can only have like one value in that pixel, which means you couldn't have an oscillation with a wavelength smaller than a pixel. Sort of like on your screen, each pixel can only have one color, right? It's like it's green or it's blue or it's pumpkin or whatever the color is, but it can't be two colors at the same time. That's what a pixel is. And so if space is quantized, then every unit of space can only have one value of the electromagnetic field, and therefore you couldn't have oscillations smaller than the size of that pixel.
I see. All right, well, that's only if space is pixelated. Can you imagine other scenarios, like maybe inside of a black hole? At the singularity, could maybe the wavelength of light go to zero there?
Yeah, that's a really cool question. But singularities are a feature of general relativity, and general relativity assumes that space is smooth and continuous. The whole idea of having a singularity is having a bunch of mass in an infinitely small space. So you can't both have a bunch of stuff in an infinitely small space and a minimum wavelength of light. Because having stuff in an infinitely small space assumes that there's no limit to how small stuff can get. So near singularities or near the event horizon of black holes, light can go to very extremely long or short wavelengths.
I see. But what about at the singularity then? Would light have a zero wavelength if a singularity exists?
What is the wavelength of light inside a singularity? Yeah, that's a cool question.
That's why they paid me the big bucks, Danny.
That's a really cool question. I don't think it could have a zero wavelength because that would imply infinite energy. And a singularity is infinite density, but it's not infinite energy. It's finite energy. And so in principle, you can like make a black hole and singularities just piling up a bunch of high energy photons in a small space. But you don't need infinite energy to do that.
All right. Well, that's the minimum of light for a wavelength. What about the maximum? Can light have a maximum wavelength?
In order to generate a photon, in order to generate light, you usually need an antenna. You need something to oscillate to make these electromagnetic fields. Like you want to make a radio waves, you need to have an antenna that's pretty big, that where the electrons can zoom up and down that antenna to make wiggles in the electromagnetic field. So in principle, if you want to make a photon that's like a galaxy wide, you need an antenna that's like a galaxy wide. So for example, if the universe is not infinitely big, if it's a finite size, that limits the practical size of a photon's wavelength, because you couldn't make an antenna bigger than the universe, and therefore you couldn't make a photon with a wavelength bigger than the universe.
I feel like now you're sort of mixing practicality with theory.
Oh, yeah.
So if we stick with theory, is there a theoretical maximum wavelength of light?
I don't think there is theoretically, even if the universe is finite, because you could just have like a part of the photon's wave. So theoretically, I don't think there's any limit to the wavelength of a photon. You're talking really, really low energy photons with really long wavelengths, so long that even if the universe is finite size, you might only be able to fit a part of that wave in. It still technically would have that very low wavelength. So I think there's only a practical limit, not a theoretical limit.
So like theoretically, you could have a photon that's bigger than the universe.
Well, you would have a photon whose wavelength is bigger than the universe. You wouldn't have the full period of that photon's oscillation inside the universe.
Well, I mean, like, let's say the universe is much bigger than what we can see, than the observable universe. Technically, the whole observable universe could right now be sitting inside of a photon.
Yeah. It sounds like a cool title of a book, The Photon Bigger Than the Universe.
The light that contains our universe. Oh my gosh, bestseller.
Boom, let's get Anthony Doerr to write that one. All the light we cannot fit in the universe.
Yeah, there you go, all the light. Wait, didn't somebody already write that?
I think he won a Pulitzer for it, but I'm sure we can just copy it.
Yeah, we're changing a few words. You know, that counts as fair game, fair use. Well, so you talked about the theory of it. Now you were sort of getting into the practicality of it. And you said there's maybe a practical limitation to making a photon bigger than the observable universe. What about, is there a practical limitation to making a minimum or smallest photon? Because isn't all light sort of generated by the motions or interactions of particles, which are quantized?
Which are quantized, but you only need one electron. Like a single electron wiggling can make a photon. The only practical limit to making a photon with a really short wavelength is that it's really high energy. So you need a lot of energy. So if you took, like, for example, all the light the sun emitted in a year and poured that into a single, like, really powerful photon, that would be very, very short wavelength.
Well, there might be a limitation to, like, how much energy there is in the universe, in which case that would give you maybe limitation to how small of a photon you can make.
Yeah. If you annihilated all of the particles in the universe and converted all of their energy into a single photon, then number one, you would no longer exist to observe this amazing photon. But even then, it would be finite because the amount of energy in the universe, in the observable universe at least, is finite. So yeah, you're right. That's a practical limit to how short wavelength photon you can make.
Yeah, that would be the sequel novel, All the Light We Cannot Make in the Universe.
The other limitation there is the black hole, right? You make a very short wavelength photon, you're going to make a black hole.
Oh, interesting. And so if you use all the energy in the universe to make a photon, it would just instantly turn into a giant black hole. Or would it? I don't know.
No, it definitely would. I mean, you're talking about putting all the energy in the universe in one spot. That's definitely a black hole for sure.
Oh, so maybe that is maybe a limitation on the minimum size of a photon. Like at some point, a photon would be so small, it would turn into a black hole.
Yeah, a photon with energy greater than the Planck energy would turn into a black hole. That's basically how you calculate the Planck energy.
So there is a limitation to a minimum wavelength of light then.
Yeah, that's the practical limitation.
Because after that, you get a black hole.
Unless that's what you wanted, right? That's sort of what you were going for. Like, I want a black hole singularity photon.
So there is a theoretical and practical minimum wavelength of light.
Yeah, the asterisk there is we don't really know what happens in that scenario. Like if you make a photon with energy greater than the Planck energy, so it collapses into a black hole, is it still a photon? Does it turn into like singularity stuff? We don't know what goes on inside a black hole. So I don't know if that really is technically a limit. It might just be like, okay, you made a photon, but now it's also a black hole at the same time. Is it still a photon? I don't know.
All right. Well, I guess that's all the answer that we can fit in this universe podcast.
That was both the longest and shortest answer we could find.
Yeah, we reached the maximum in both directions here. We need another dimension just to fully explore this question. But that was a great question. Thank you, Sonia. And so let's get into our last question of the day, which is about rainbows. Let's jump into that rainbow. But first, let's take another quick break.
The financial universe out there can seem like a vast place, full of scary mysteries and exciting possibilities. But it can also be overwhelming to navigate, especially when you're first starting out in life. It feels sometimes like just one wrong turn could send you hurtling endlessly towards a financial black hole. But don't worry, you don't have to navigate the financial universe on your own. With the right tools, you can master the financial universe and chart your course with confidence. Intuit helps you navigate the financial universe through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, we're answering listener questions here today. And our last question comes from Clark, who is 7 years old.
And I love getting questions from kids. I love when kids listen to our podcast. I love when kids listen with our parents and talk about it. Thanks to all of you parents who are raising the next generation of scientists.
Why do we always see rainbows bend the same way? Why can't they bend sideways or upside down?
All right, great question from Clark. I guess basically the question is, why does a rainbow look like a rainbow? Like, why does it look like an arc and not an S shape or any other shape? And specifically, why is it always an arch bending down? from what we can see. Could you have a smiley face rainbow or a sea shade rainbow without turning your head?
Yeah, it is very cool. Rainbows actually do bend sideways and upside down. Rainbows are actually circles. So you're only seeing part of it because the Earth is blocking the rest of the view.
They're not actually circles, right? Because they're not actually things.
Yeah, so rainbows are not physical objects. They're an image that you are seeing. Your brain reconstructs what it thinks is going on out there based on the directions of light that hit your eye. And so you can see things that are like not there the same way you can like see yourself in the mirror, but you're not actually behind the mirror. It's just an image of yourself in the mirror.
Right. A rainbow is like a mirage or like a hologram, basically, right?
Yeah. It's an image your brain has reconstructed. It says all this light is coming in this direction. So it looks like there is something there giving off this light, but it doesn't have to be like just like with a mirror. You don't have to have somebody standing through a window to create that image. You can just use a mirror and it looks exactly as if there's an inverted copy of you standing on the other side of the wall.
Right. Although I guess philosophically, you could say that a rainbow is a physical object, right? Because it's the water droplets that make up the rainbow that is the rainbow.
Yeah. In the same way that the mirror is a physical object and it's creating this image in your mind. And you're right about the physical mechanism also. The reason you see a rainbow is that the sunlight is hitting the water droplets and those water droplets are spreading out the light. When light passes from air to water, different colors of light bend a different amount as that happens. And so when they go into the water droplet and then back out of the water droplet, different colors, green, red, blue, yellow, all take a slightly different path. And that's why you see a rainbow. It spreads the light out into those different colors.
Right. I wonder if it would help to sort of paint the situation that leads to a rainbow, right? Because we don't see rainbows every day. You also don't see them anywhere in the sky. They have to be in a certain position in the sky relative to the sun for you to see a rainbow. And there also has to be a lot of rain and or water in the air, right?
Yeah, exactly. So in order to make a rainbow, you need to distribute a bunch of water droplets in the air and have the sun behind you. Then the sun will pass like over your head. It will enter those water droplets, bounce off the back of the water droplet, come back out, and then hit your eye. And so if you imagine just like a single water droplet, it's going to be spreading the light out in different colors, green, red, orange, purple, whatever. And you will see one color of light from each droplet. But if the droplet is a little bit higher, you're going to be seeing red light from it. If the droplet is a little bit lower, you're going to be seeing purple light from it, because those different colors come out of the droplets at slightly different angles.
Right. You kind of have to imagine like a wall of water drops floating in the air in front of you. And the light, the sun is right behind you. It's shining a light, sort of like a projector or a flashlight. It's shining the light behind you. It's going over your head and it's hitting this giant wall of water drops. Some of the light will just go through, right?
Yeah.
And you'll never see that light again.
Mm-hmm.
But over the arch of the rainbow, light actually gets reflected back to you in different colors.
That's right. And every droplet there is sending every color of light out. So it's like a big screen. Every droplet is sending out a whole spectrum, purple, blue, green, orange, red, all in different directions. Where you're standing, you're seeing a ring of droplets that are all sending you red light. And then you see another ring of droplets that are all sending you green light. And then another ones that are all sending you purple light. And you see them in a ring because they all have the same angle relative to you.
Yeah, I think this is maybe where it gets kind of hairy to describe in an audio podcast. But basically, the answer to Clark's question is geometry, right? Basically, the reason it looks like an arch is that the physics, the phenomenon that creates this illusion of a rainbow, basically depends on the geometry of you and your eyeball and the sun. And that's why it looks like a semicircle.
Yeah, exactly. And if the ground wasn't in the way and there was water down there as well, like if you were floating up in the atmosphere and you were looking at a sheet of water, you would see the rainbow as a complete circle.
Right. And so the reason it's not like an arch bending upwards or to the side has to do with the fact that the sun is a circle, or because your eyeball is a circle, or is it? Oh, because the water drops are circular, right? They're little spheres. That's the real reason, right?
Well, the water droplets are little spheres, but they don't have to be spheres for this to work. The reason that the rainbow is an arch is because actually it's a circle and you're only seeing part of it. It's a circle because any drop along that circle has the same angle relative to your eye of the same color light coming out of it.
No, but I think if the water drops were a different shape, the rainbow would be a different shape, wouldn't it? Like, let's say if all the raindrops were shaped like a cylinder, pointing vertically, then you wouldn't see maybe an arch. Or maybe they were all football shaped pointing in the same direction, then the arch would be kind of distorted.
Oh yeah, I see what you're saying. That's definitely true. The reason it's a circle is that there's a symmetry, right? That the water droplets can hit you from any angle because they're spheres. Yeah, I get your point. So if they all were distorted, then that would definitely would distort the rainbow. It wouldn't be a circle anymore. There's other interesting things going on there with the geometry. Like sometimes you can see a second rainbow, and that happens because the light bounces twice within the raindrop. Like it goes into the raindrop, it bounces off the back of the raindrop, and then bounces off again from the back of the raindrop, and then comes out of the raindrop. So it comes out at a different angle than the like primary beam, which is why you see it in a different location. And because it bounces twice, it actually flips the colors. So the normal rainbow has like red on the top and purple on the bottom. The double bow, the second one, has purple on the top and red on the bottom.
Mm. So maybe the real answer for Clark here is that the reason it bends the same way is because you're always looking at it the same way. And because the ground is always beneath you.
Mm-hmm. It's generated by the angle between the sun and your eyeball and the raindrops. And so you're going to see it wherever that relationship exists, which is why it always looks the same.
Right. But I think, as you were saying, like, so let's say we were out there in space and there was a huge cloud of water drops in front of me and the sun was behind me, I would see a rainbow as a circle.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And if there was, you know, a planet blocking some of that water on top, then I would see the rainbow as an up pointing arch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or somehow the water droplets ended on the right side of this cloud, or there was a planet on my right, then the rainbow would look like a C.
Exactly.
For example.
And if you were an alien or a different species that could see different wavelengths of light, then you would see the rainbow extend, because rainbows have not just visible light, but also UV and infrared light in them.
Mm.
They're invisible rings to the rainbow.
So it would look like a thicker rainbow.
There'd be more stripes to it, depending how your alien or mantis shrimp brain interpreted it.
Interesting. Okay, so here's the answer for Clark. The reason rainbows are circular is because the water drops are little spheres. They're also little circles, little balls of water. And the reason you only see the top arch of that circle is because usually the ground is blocking the bottom half. But if the ground was blocking the side half or the top half, then we would see rainbows as a different shape. Or if you just tilt your head.
Yeah, exactly. If you stood next to a cliff, you could see a rainbow sideways.
All right. Well, great question, Clark. Thanks for sending that in. And thanks to everyone who sent a question in today.
And thanks to everybody who asks questions and thinks about the universe and joins this community of curious people wanting to understand.
Yeah, and thank you for listening to this program and telling all your friends about it and posting it on social media and reviewing us on the podcast apps.
And playing it for your children.
And liking banana jokes. All right, well, we hope you enjoyed that. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
For more science and curiosity, come find us on social media where we answer questions and post videos. We're on Twitter, Discord, Insta, and now TikTok. Thanks for listening, and remember that Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Got menopause? We've got you. Hi. Jackie here, founder of ExoJackie. Feel supported throughout your menopause journey and beyond with our organic protein powders and symptom relief boosts. Formulated to keep bones and muscles strong, ExoJackie products help reduce bloating, hot flashes, and weight gain. Enjoy 20% off with promo code EXOPODCAST. Shop now at ExoJackie.com. Made for women by women.